Welcome to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by Tablet Suites, Waco Northeast. This episode, In the Locker Room with Donnie Anderson. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by Tablet Suites, Waco Northeast. I'm author and oral historian Jackson Michael. This will be my final episode as the host and producer of the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, as another host and producer is taking over in May. It's been an honor and a privilege working for the Texas Sports Hall of Fame in this capacity, and I'd like to thank the Texas Sports Hall of Fame for the opportunity and especially thank all of the great legends who have shared their stories with the Texas Sports Hall of Fame for these episodes. I'd also like to thank all of you listeners. Again, it's been really special to produce these documentary podcasts featuring many legends of the great state of Texas. I do hope that you continue to listen to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast and know that you can always reach me at thegamebeforethemoney.com. I am extra excited about this episode as we get to hear from football great Donnie Anderson, who had a tremendous high school and college career in the state of Texas. Donnie Anderson grew up in Stinnett, Texas, in the Texas Panhandle. We'll hear stories about Stinnett's deep runs into the Texas high school football playoffs during Anderson's day. Donnie next took his talents to Texas Tech and had an outstanding career with the Red Raiders, one that landed him on the cover of Dave Campbell's Texas Football in 1965. And he'll share a nice story about that as well. Vince Lombardi's Green Bay Packers selected Anderson in the first round of the 1965 NFL Draft. He was also drafted by the Houston Oilers during the height of the AFL-NFL war for players. He signed a record-setting $600,000 contract with the Packers. That was about $200,000 more than what Joe Namath signed for with the New York Jets. Donnie Anderson will share some great stories about how that contract came about, as well as some fascinating memories from his time at Texas Tech and the important role he played for the Packers in the Ice Bowl, the 1967 NFL championship game between the Dallas Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers, played at Lambeau Field in sub-zero weather. Donnie Anderson was born in Borger, Texas, and grew up in the nearby town of Stinnett. He talked about his father's work during World War II and the family moving to Stinnett.
Stinnett's 10 miles from Borger, which was at the time a 4A school. It's a little plant. During the war, they had like seven plants of gasoline, butane, carbon black, tire companies, all that to support the war. And so my dad was working for Phillips Petroleum Company, and we moved to Stinnett so we could grow up on a ranch and farm. My dad was a cowboy, and my brother and I grew up country boys and cowboy cattle. So we had hogs and drove a tractor and played baseball and football and basketball. You know, the little town of Stinnett is about 2,500 people.
Donnie played on the same Stinnett football team as his older brother, Larry. He gives the backstory as to how many people thought the brothers were twins when they played for the Rattlers.
Well, what happened, we moved from Borger, Texas. My dad decided that he was an all-district offensive end or defensive end from Shamrock, Texas in 1940 or 41. He thought it'd be a good deal if when we moved to Stinnett, my brother was 13 months older than I was. And that turned out to be probably a blessing for both of us, because we went to see the superintendent at Stinnett. Now, keep in mind, that was a 1A school. He asked the superintendent if my brother could repeat the seventh grade, because he'd gone to seventh grade in Borger. He said, well, I've never had anybody come in with families and ask them to repeat the grade, but usually to advance a grade. But he said, I don't see anything wrong with it. My brother's birthday was in April of 42, and mine was in May of 43. So he did that, and a lot of people thought that we were twins, and some of the people in the district thought that maybe I was older.
Between 1959 and 1960, Stinnett had a combined record of 24-3 under head coach Don Light and had big state playoff runs. The Rattlers were powered by the Anderson brothers and future Texas A&M star Dude McClain. In Anderson's junior year of 1959, there was a three-way district tie for what team would go to the state playoffs. Anderson tells the story of how Stinnett won the tiebreaker and their run in the 1959 1A playoffs.
And there were three teams that tied it for district, and they just flipped a coin and we won it. So then we started our parade of wins, and we got beat by Sundown, and I want to say it's the regionals. We had a lot of guys returning for the next year.
Stinnett had an even better year in 1960. Anderson remembered an early season win against Dalhart.
Okay, Dalhart, they were 2A, and we beat them up at their home. I remember that score because they were like third in the state, and we beat them 41-12. My brother did some stats on that. I think nobody ever kicked the extra point. They ran for two, but nobody ever had an extra point. It was just only a 2-point.
The 12 points Dalhart scored was the most scored against Stinnett all season. Meanwhile, the offense poured on the points. The Rattlers continued to crush teams in the state playoffs by wide margins, including a 57-8 win over Plains in Lubbock. That set up a state semifinal matchup to be played at Bobcat Stadium in Childress, Texas, against the Albany Lions. The game quickly sold out the 5,000-seat stadium. Stinnett had won 13 games in a row, and Albany had won 12. The headline in the Childress Index read, "Finest game in several years in store for fans Friday night."
We were number one in the state, but we thought we were real good. And then ice came flowing in to Childress. And I think the guy's name was T.G. Wiley, I think. He kicked a 40-yard field goal in the ice to beat us. But most of us all remember that, if we're still alive, that field goal.
That's pretty impressive under those conditions.
Yeah, I guess the barefooted, but he was also barefooted at the time. So it was.
T.G. Wiley was a tackle for the Albany Lions and had previously kicked a 42-yard field goal that season. Those were long field goals back then, especially for high schoolers. The icy game against Albany has since been remembered as one of the great Texas high school playoff games of all time. Albany went on to win the state championship game. Donnie Anderson, along with his brother Larry, chose to go to Texas Tech. He spoke about the family's unique tie to the school, even though the tie didn't sway their decision to attend Texas Tech.
It turned out that my mother's father was a lawyer in Shamrock, Texas, and he tried to pass a bill to put a university or a college up in the panhandle because there was only one school, and that was West Texas State in Canyon. Well, as it turned out, the governor vetoed the bill, and there was some people in the West Texas area that supported to get another college. And so it came up with another bill to get Texas Tech. So he had a lot to do helping Lubbock, Texas. In 1920, finally they opened the school in 23. And that didn't have anything to do with us going there. We just liked the school, and I liked Arkansas a lot. That was my second choice. SMU, A&M, Texas, all of the schools were interested. TCU was the only school that didn't offer my brother and I any scholarship.
So now there's a very little known fact. Donnie Anderson's grandfather actually had something to do with Texas Tech being established in the 1920s. Here's another lesser known fact about Donnie Anderson and his brother Larry. They were both outstanding baseball players.
My brother and I both were pretty good baseball players and had some offers from major leagues to sign. Whether it was true or not, came out in the Amarillo paper that we were offered $50,000 to play baseball with the Baltimore Orioles. Now, that's many years ago, and very difficult to validate that, other than we have an article from Amarillo News. I always loved baseball. I always was a big fan of Mickey Mantle, and I got to meet him here in Dallas more than once. But when I was 10 or 11, I said, I'm going to take Mickey Mantle's place in center field. And it took me about 5 or 6 years, maybe in freshman in college, to realize that there were 4 million other young men wanted to take Mickey Mantle's place too. So as it turned out, I guess my good Lord probably pushed me towards football.
When we return, we'll hear more stories from Donnie Anderson about his college football career at Texas Tech and his pro career with the Green Bay Packers, including his memories of playing in the Ice Bowl. On In the Locker Room with Donnie Anderson on the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by the Temple Suites, Waco Northeast. When you come to Waco, be sure to stay at the Temple Suites, Waco Northeast, located just a short distance from the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. You'll start your day off with a delicious complimentary breakfast, and you'll also enjoy the Temple Suites' free Wi-Fi, fitness center, and pool. Next time you come to Waco, make the Temple Suites Waco Northeast your home base on the road. Welcome back to In the Locker Room with Donnie Anderson on the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by the Temple Suites Waco Northeast. Donnie Anderson arrived in Lubbock to play football for the Texas Tech Red Raiders, and when he showed up, he didn't know where he'd fit in on the Red Raiders' depth chart. As an underclassman, he figured he'd be pretty low.
And I went to get my uniform at Texas Tech, and I saw so many guys. Every time I'd look at a guy, it was like he was a running back, and I figured I'd be on 16. But it turned out, when I went to get my uniform, I said that I was Donnie Anderson, and they said, well, you're wearing a red jersey. I said, a red jersey? I said, what team is that? And they said, that's first team. I said, the first team? Man, I said, I made the first team, the little Stinnett, Texas boy.
And what a terrific college career it was for Anderson at Texas Tech. He lettered all 4 years in football and 2 years in baseball. He averaged over 4 yards per carry each football season. As a sophomore, he finished second in the Southwest Conference in rushing. He had a breakout season his junior year. He led the nation in yards from scrimmage and led the Southwest Conference in rushing and receptions. He also helped lead the Red Raiders to the Sun Bowl. His fantastic junior year of 1964 landed him on the cover of Dave Campbell's Texas Football 1965 preview issue. Anderson shared a couple of nice stories about that experience.
Well, being that old country boy from Stinnett, Texas, I never thought about something in advance of being on the cover. But I met Campbell, and he told me of that 65 year. He said, "Donnie, that saved us." He said, "That brought us over the top." And I said, "You mean at the top?" He said, "No, we could stay in business." I don't remember him saying how many he sold, but he said, "We sold so many of them." And he said, "I think we owe it all to you." It was a nice thing to say. The only thing was nicer, one of my grandsons went to Air Force, and he committed over at the Campbell Center. I guess they call it the Campbell Center. And he and I were able to take a picture. And that was so cool because the picture behind us was the one that I was on the cover in 65.
Anderson had a tremendous senior season in 1965 and led Texas Tech to the Gator Bowl. He scored 17 touchdowns that season and was a consensus All-American. One of his touchdowns was a 100-yard kickoff return against Oklahoma State. He talked about returning kickoffs for touchdowns and gave credit to Texas Tech head coach J.T. King, as well as his teammates.
Yeah, you can remember those because I only had two. I had one against Baylor and one against Oklahoma State. Yeah, I owe all that to Coach King and our college coach, and he threw the ball to me. We had Tom Wilson as quarterback, and he wasn't big as anything, but he could throw the ball. And so we ended up, he had me on kickoffs and sometimes punt returns and throwing the ball to me and running the ball. So I owe that to Coach King, and John Conley was our offensive line coach. You know, sometimes, like running back a punt, if you know what you're doing, you get lucky on some blocks, you break the seal and you just go right up the seal.
After Texas Tech played Georgia Tech in the Gator Bowl, Anderson announced that he chose to play pro football for the NFL's Green Bay Packers rather than the AFL's Houston Oilers. That was despite the fact that Houston was closer to home and that his father worked for Phillips Petroleum, which was affiliated with Oilers owner Bud Adams. Anderson signed for a reported $600,000, a record-setting contract that was $200,000 more than the contract that landed Joe Namath on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Anderson didn't make the decision to sign with Green Bay on his own, however. He sought the advice of another Texas Sports Hall of Fame member, Bobby Lane. Here, Donnie Anderson shares his memory of meeting with Packers head coach Vince Lombardi and the story behind his historic contract.
I met with Vince up in Baltimore. They were playing the Packers, and so they flew me up to the game. I met Lombardi, which is a very short meeting, but he said, "Turn that TV off." He said, "This young boy is looking at the TV. He wanted me to look right at him, eyeball to eyeball." And he said, "We want to sign you." And I said, "Well, I'd like to go to Green Bay," but I said, "Houston's offering me quite a bit more money." And he said, "Well, we're going to sign you." Well, going to Bud Adams. Bud Adams owned 37% of the Phillips Petroleum Company. Well, what made it difficult was my dad, who worked for Phillips Petroleum Company. He said, "Just go ahead and sign with Houston and get it out of the way. We'll move on." That was a tough day. I said, "Dad, I'm going to go to Green Bay." Obviously, the Packers didn't have oil wells. They didn't have service stations. They had cash. So I'd met with another Texas Hall of Famer, Bobby Lane. He said, "Just take the money." He said, "That's the best way."
The Packers also signed Jim Grabowski to a reported contract worth about $400,000. That was an enormous amount of money for a pro football contract back then, when even star players had off-season jobs to help make ends meet. Now, you might think that having being paid that kind of money, Anderson and Grabowski would see a lot of action. Packers head coach Vince Lombardi, however, wasn't the type of coach to give rookies a lot of responsibility.
I felt pretty confident that I could play for the Packers. And then Lombardi, he didn't like rookies, so Grabowski and I didn't get to play much. Our Gillingham, that was three number one draft choices that we just kind of sit out the year. We played a little bit, kind of mopping up the score, but that's the way Vince was. He just, unless he had to play a rookie, he just didn't play us. So the next year, we were right in the middle of everything. He made us better ball players, but it sure was hard sitting over on the bench. I was on kickoffs, punt returns, ran back a kickoff.
The Packers played against Lamar Hunt's Kansas City Chiefs in the first Super Bowl, and Donnie Anderson saw some action in the game. His most notable play was when he was involved with Kansas City defensive back Fred the Hammer Williamson, who made comments to the press before the game about how he would knock out Green Bay receivers with his violent hit called the Hammer. It was Williamson, however, who was knocked out by Packer running back Donnie Anderson.
And he and I had a collision on the power sweep of the Packers. Lombardi sweep knocked him out. I had to take him out of the game on a stretcher. So he was knocked out. That was kind of famous. And Willie Wood said on the sideline, he said, "The Hammer is out." And somebody said, "Who got him?" And Max McGee said, "He got him with his wallet." Sure enough, his wallet knocked him out. Because of the contract I signed.
The Packers won Super Bowl I 35-10. You might think that Anderson playing for a world championship football team after signing likely the wealthiest contract in league history would be living the glamorous life after that win. Well, it turns out that his offseason wasn't as glamorous as one might think.
After the first Super Bowl, right after that game with Kansas City and the Packers, the next day I was at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, honoring my military obligation.
Did you fly back from the Super Bowl with the team?
No.
Or did the Army fly you back?
No, Army didn't. I paid my own way back. Best I can remember. I had that day off the next day, you know, to get to Fort Campbell. So I flew into Lexington, I think, and then took a bus over. A short story about that. I called at Fort Campbell after the game in L.A. It became a real foggy day. All the planes were canceled for a period of time. And I said, "It doesn't look like I'm going to get in there in time." And they said, "Well, you'll just be AWOL if you're not here in 48 hours. So I think I got in there with 2 hours to spare, I think.
Before the Packers advanced to Super Bowl I, they played the Dallas Cowboys in the Cotton Bowl for the 1966 NFL Championship. 1967 brought the same matchup to the NFL Championship game, but this time, the game was played at Lambeau Field in Green Bay. A severe cold front blew in before the game, dropping temperatures well below zero. The game became one of the most famous in NFL history and is referred to as the Ice Bowl. Donnie Anderson, who often punted for the Packers in 1967, tells us his memories of waking up that morning and getting to the stadium.
I remember a lot because you don't forget something that cold. But I grew up in a panhandle, and I won't say that you ever get used to that type of cold weather. You just can't. I mean, it's just too cold. and you got to keep moving around. And my father taught my brother and I how to go down and feed the cattle, how to stay warm. I was living by myself there in Green Bay, and I would go down to downtown or inn in Green Bay and have breakfast. My car was parked underneath in a warm garage, so I didn't think anything about it. When I got there at downtown or inn, I was about two or three, maybe four or five guys outside, and they said, "Hey, Donnie, the cold front blew in last night." I said, "A cold front?" And they said, "Yeah, it's 20 below zero." I said, "Get out of here, 20 below zero." They said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, what's the high for the day?" And they said, "Well, they think it's going to be about 15. So I thought about the bridges in Green Bay, and I said, "I better hit breakfast and get out of here." So I got over to practice about 25 minutes early. And there we are, a few guys there, and guys that sit around and play cribbage and whatever. And so I looked on the chalkboard and saw, I guess, Dad Brazier, our equipment guy, written what time to go out on the field. So Vince said, "Punters don't go out." So we didn't go out till 12, 15 or something like that. So he walked over and he said, "Young man," he said, "it's going to be a tough day for you."
The field was frozen, and it was very difficult to get any footing. Moreover, the frigid conditions made it difficult to handle the football. Anderson learned both of those cold, hard facts early in the game.
It was interesting. The first play of the game, most people don't remember this, but I do. I fumbled, and Chuck Mersin recovered it, and really difficult to keep your footage. I figured if I weighed 212 pounds or 15, whatever it was, and Jethro Pugh and Bob Lilly and all those guys weighed 270, that I had a better chance of keeping my footing than they did. It turned out that was a good thought on my side, because they're just too big.
He also spoke about a unique way he found to keep his hands warm, a necessity in a game in which he ran the ball 18 times, caught 4 passes, and punted 8 times.
Many, many stories about the Ice Bowl, but I remembered it, just keeping your hands warm, and that's moving around, keeping your bonnet on the best you could to keep the heat inside your body. Going back to my dad, being an old cowboy, I knew how to stay warm, and Vince didn't want us to use gloves, wide receivers, quarterback, running backs. So turns out that I put my hands under Gail Gillingham's armpits, and that helped keep them warm. And then on the sideline, we had those butane blowers coming through the covered sideline. And I actually stayed decently warm. I know I touched the ball that day 30 times.
The Cowboys took a 17-14 lead in the fourth quarter. Lance Retzel caught a halfback option pass from Dan Reeves to put Dallas ahead. Later in the fourth quarter, the Packers got the ball back for one final chance to win. It was an historic drive in the sub-zero conditions that ended with Bart Starr famously taking the ball over the goal line for the game-winning touchdown with 13 seconds left. Donnie Anderson played a big role in the Packers' drive down the field and told us about the strategy.
In that game, outside the huddle, I said, "Bart, on the fan pattern, that's a formation. I said, I'm open over here on the right if you need me." That created some big plays. Now, I think I caught 3 passes in that drive, I think. And that's because Bart knew. And Chuck Howley, he would hit and then fade back in front of Boyd Dowler, thinking he'd probably get an interception. And it turned out him doing that allowed us to have some big plays with Chuck Mersin and myself.
Although Starr's touchdown stands as the most famous play of the game, and indeed one of the most well-known plays in NFL history for its day, it was Anderson who nearly became the hero. he stated that he was given the ball on first down, and both he and Vince Lombardi thought that Anderson had scored.
Well, the first one, believe it or not, Vince Lombardi said, "Well, young man, they took one away from me." I looked up at the official and I said, "I scored." And he didn't say anything. And from the camera up in the press box, it showed that I did score. But they didn't have instant replay and all that. I was really surprised that the guy took the ball half my body, including the ball, was across the goal line. And he just didn't see it. So he put it 12 inches from the goal line.
If you'd like to hear more about the Ice Bowl and or more iconic moments in Dallas Cowboys history, be sure to check out episode 10 of the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, In the Locker Room with Bob Lilly, and hear Bob Lilly share memories of the Ice Bowl and his own Texas Sports Hall of Fame football career. After the Ice Bowl, the Packers went on to defeat the Oakland Raiders in Super Bowl II. Anderson scored a touchdown in the third quarter to give Green Bay a 23-7 lead en route to a 33-14 victory. Anderson played seven more NFL seasons after winning two Super Bowls in his first 2 years. Overall, he played nine NFL seasons, six with Green Bay, and three with the St. Louis Cardinals. Donnie Anderson was inducted into the Texas Sports Hall of Fame in 1984. He spoke about his journey to the hallowed halls and what the honor means to him.
Well, let's go back to Stinnett. When you're a kid, you don't think about being in the Hall of Fame, Texas Sports Hall of Fame, or the Green Bay Packer Hall of Fame, or any of the rest of it. But when I was a little boy, I used to look out. There was a railroad track pretty close to our house. And I always wanted to know where that train was going. That's one of my dreams, to get on that train and find out where it was going. The Hall of Fame, obviously, is a great honor, and I think that one probably means more to me than any of them.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by the TownPlay Suites, Waco Northeast. We invite you to visit Waco and the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. And when you do, book your stay at the TownPlay Suites, Waco Northeast.